Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. It's good to be with you. I hope you had a wonderful Labor Day weekend. My family stayed home. We had discussed the possibility of my husband and I taking a trip this past weekend, and the plans never really materialized, and there's nothing quite like a weekend at home where you just get tasks done and you relax and you hang out and you don't go do a bunch of things and spend a lot of money. So I hope that you had, whatever your choice was this Labor Day weekend, a really great, I hate to call it end of the summer. That seems so sad. But then also if you're entering in fall, maybe that's happy for you. I guess to each their own. It does mean that we're 63 days away from Election Day. That seems like it's come pretty fast, and yet it also feels like we've been talking about the election season since essentially Joe Biden got elected the first time in 2020, and we're really, really close. I think it's one of the Carolinas, North Carolina maybe, starts voting in 3 days. 3 days, and votes will start to be cast. I will also mention that what happens not in the next 3 days? The debate. That is a week from today. So people will be voting, and Kamala Harris will have been campaigning for maybe like, what, 45, 47 days as the party's nominee. She has no platform on her website. She has done one sit-down interview. She has done zero sit-down interviews by herself. And she hasn't held a single press conference. Imagine that for just a second. I know it's not hard to imagine it because it is the reality. That Kamala Harris, the anointed nominee of the party and now the official nominee of the party after the DNC convention, has taken one opportunity to, quote, air quote, answer the questions of the American people in a sit-down conversation with Dana Bash on CNN. No press conferences, no policies on her website for you to go through and say, you know what, this is where I imagine a lot of people are. I can't stand Donald Trump. People are saying that Kamala Harris is a socialist. I'd really like to see that she doesn't mean it. I'd really like to see her in print put down, no, I'm not, it's not going to be crazy like they're saying. This is what I'm going to do. And then she can stand by it. I don't even know where she would be standing to stand by it because she's not going on any media outlets to actually back up what she's not putting out there for the American people to consume. I said this last week, but I don't believe that she is going to put policies on her website until after September 10th. I think she is going to wait for the debate to happen as to not put any rounds in the chamber, so to speak, figuratively speaking, of course, for Donald Trump in that debate. Because I think that her policies are super radical. She kind of tried to jump out of the revolving door with fanfare and a big ta-da with some of those economic policies that she talked about before when she was mentioning taxation on unrealized gains and price gouging, price controls, and all that. And man, she jumped right back into the fray as soon as she started doing that because people don't like to hear those types of things. Kamala Harris is whatever she needs to be. She always has been. She's resourceful. She's nimble. And so are her policies. Now, that might sound like a compliment to you. All of those things that she is, it's all for her own benefit. It's all for her own political collateral, her political career. If it were for you, she would have her words out there in her own words, on her own terms, in order to fully dictate her message to the American people. Think about this for a second, because this is really important when it comes to an election, especially like one we have coming up here, because it's really about two personalities. It's really what we're deciding on in November. I mean, the differences between these two candidates is so immense that there's not going to be one policy where they're splitting hairs. I've been thinking I was going to go with Kamala Harris, but now I think because of this one policy, I'm going to go with Donald Trump. I mean, most people have a pretty good idea of what direction they're going in as far as this election goes, if they're even going to vote at all. The people who are gettable out there, in my opinion, are those who aren't sure they're going to show up to vote at all. Kamala Harris wants you to simply trust her. She doesn't want you to look at her policies, and she's not interested in making a commitment to you that lays out, these are the things that should you elect me, I will do for you. Kamala Harris's campaign messages, trust me. And if we look at Kamala Harris's, at least federal government representation, what she's voted on, what she's participated in, the things that she has championed over her career as a United States senator and as a vice president, she is incredibly progressive, far left, left of most people in the Democrat Party, definitely left in the Democrat Party consistently. It's the most consistent thing about her. She does not take moderate positions. She does not take difficult stands. She always very vocally takes the easiest, obvious stand so she can watch the mob assemble, watch the protests gather, watch the movement form. And then she quickly steps in front of it and is like, hooray for this. What are we talking about? She is very resourceful in that way. She's asking the American people to trust her to the extent that she doesn't even need to put out policies for the American voter to consume. She is going to not have policies on her website when voting begins. There are going to be people casting ballots for Kamala Harris who have never seen her plan for her 4 years in the presidency. That's the power of the anti-Trump movement. But I think that Donald Trump has something much, much more to offer people who are raising an eyebrow to this moment in time, people who are saying this is not the direction that we want to head in. And when you hear Kamala Harris say we're not going back, everyone's like, but that's you now. They get it. They understand it. They aren't sitting there in a we're not going back there. When they think back on Donald Trump's time in the presidency, they're reminiscent. When they think back on the 3.5 years of Joe Biden's White House and Kamala Harris repeatedly bragging on how energetic and active Joe Biden is, you know that it's a bold-faced lie, and it's what she does best. She says what the politically expedient thing is. She does that best without any regard for truth or shame. She comes out and says what she believes that people need to hear. Those people who need to stay the course. Those people who have a vitriolic hatred for Donald Trump. It powers their own human system to hate Donald Trump. She needs to make sure that they continue on that course. Stay the course. Trust Kamala. I mean, for me, it's really getting to the point right now where her complete and total lack of effort in assembling some sort of strategic campaign to carve out the Kamala fingerprint on the Democratic Party, to offer the American people an actual way forward, an actual thought on what a vote for Kamala Harris is going to do for the American people, a vision for the future. They are so dramatically running away from that type of campaign that I continue to look back on what Donald Trump continues to say, and boy, this thing needs to be too big to rig. Because it looks like, to me, it looks like the Harris-Walz campaign isn't even trying. And if they're not even trying, I'm asking myself, why would they not think that they have to try? And that gives me great concern. And that folds into all of the censorship that we've discussed here recently with social media and how the government is pressured all the various different social media outlets to not allow certain things to be said, to amplify certain things that are being said. When we're not allowed to question anything, I have a huge problem with that. I have a huge concern that rises in my mind when I hear Kamala Harris saying, as she did here recently, that there isn't proper regulation and oversight and the things that are allowed to be said on social media. She didn't get it. But it's not easy for Kamala Harris to do what she needs to do, which is to completely see out her campaign strategy, which is, trust me. If the campaign strategy for Kamala Harris is simply, we're supposed to trust her to do what's right, that means she can change her opinions on a dime if she decides that the winds of favor have changed and she needs to move forward. She's not committed to you for anything. You're just supposed to trust her in all circumstances. And it reminds me that on our money and in our nation's capital, everywhere you go, it says, in God we trust. And when you look at the left and they continuously prove that they believe government to be God, then it all starts to make sense to me. I'm curious what you think about the Harris-Walls campaign strategy so far. And that's the Annie Fry YouTube channel poll for today. If you go to the YouTube channel, just go to Annie Fry, you can see our live broadcast for today and you can grade it. An A, a B slash C, a D, or an F. And we'd love to know what you think about that. When we come back, Ryan's going to join us and we're going to discuss that here in the studio. Dan says, I give it a B slash C. They're playing the cards dealt to them. It's not their fault the media is giving them a pass. Except for the fact that, and Dan, I don't particularly disagree with you. Take every advantage you get. But if they're giving a pass, like, why wouldn't you want to be in front of reporters and cameras and microphones to send your message out? Because if you're selling your message and your message is good, wouldn't you want people to know it? Go give us a vote and a comment on the Annie Fry YouTube chat, and we'll discuss our responses to this as a group when we come back. Don't go away.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word, it's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. It's Tuesday. It's not Monday. I haven't felt totally out of whack. It feels like Tuesday. Yesterday felt like a Monday. I kept telling myself that. It's hard usually like Thursday of a short week.
Well, I'll give you a curveball on all of it. Sunday did not feel like Sunday to me.
I said out loud with my family, it was probably the 12th time that I'd done it, I'm like, I keep remembering I don't have to go to work tomorrow.
Yes.
I kept picking up my phone to start doing the Sunday afternoon, evening, okay, what's happened, listen to stuff. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't need to do that. So it was like a snow day every time I
exactly.
thought of it. I felt really good. I was happy about it.
I scheduled a little get together with a friend of mine I don't normally see on Sunday night, because I knew neither one of us will have anything scheduled. And that, therefore, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're doing things. And it's a Sunday night. This is definitely not a normal Sunday. So that's why Sunday didn't feel like normal to me.
Did you do stuff this weekend? Did you have a really busy weekend?
No, I never do on Labor Day. Labor Day or Memorial Day, I typically don't do anything. Yeah.
Did you run all over the place, Brad?
No, I was stuck in the house.
So you stayed in?
Yeah.
It's so nice to be able to just calm, stay cool. Like I said, my husband and I were thinking about maybe taking a trip, just the two of us. And we thought maybe we'll do this in October just for a weekend. And there were multiple times I was sitting at home after having done a task small.
Yeah.
Like
house stuff.
I'm happy I'm here.
Yeah, me too. Labor Day and Memorial Day both are big. If you have any connection to an area lake, that is a huge holiday for you. I don't really have that connection, so those are holidays that I don't utilize. I don't feel like.
But the other thing too, if you're like me, you don't want to go to the lake then, because everybody's at the lake.
Kind of, yeah.
It's like
I get that.
You want to go the next weekend or the weekend before when it's not going to be as crazy.
But if you are a part of a lake community that there's a party cove and there's like a stage, that's the big time to go.
It's funny because it's the same thing as having a cookout. Instead of sitting on land, you sit on your boat.
Yeah, which one would you rather do?
Do I have to buy the boat?
No, you don't. It's your friend's boat.
If it's my friend's boat, like, maybe.
Yeah.
Man, there's just this huge wall that exists between sitting at home and not having to do anything to go anywhere and being on the other side where you are sitting on the boat, having an ice cold iced tea, Arnold Palmer, John Daly, whichever, wherever you fit on that line of iced tea, on a boat, in the sun, taking it all in. But then you have to drive there. You have to pack everything. You got to maybe bring the kids. You got to watch the kids on the boat.
I never regret doing it, though.
No, exactly. Once you're there, my husband and I are always like, I'm so glad we did this. Like, we're like high-fiving that we just showed up elsewhere.
Yeah, but doing it, I never regret staying home either. So
same. Yeah, this time we stayed home. I did pay a little bit of attention to the news. It didn't seem like it was that crazy of a weekend. I think the Arlington Cemetery thing has really come to a head. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. I'm going to ask Jim Carafano about that at 105, as well as the situation with Hamas and Israel and Hirsch, the hostage that was killed, and what happens next. So I'm looking forward to that conversation with Jim Carafano next. But does it feel like the wind has completely stopped blowing the sails of the Kamala Harris campaign?
Yeah, I think there's still a little leftover momentum where they're still moving.
No, that's just all them in the boat, just like
in the direction.
Like, yeah, just a little bit more.
But yeah, the wind has stopped blowing. I don't know that it's blowing toward Trump.
No.
But it's just kind of stopped.
Yeah.
Everything's stopped.
The YouTube poll for today, we'd love for you to come to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and vote on this poll. And whenever we do these grading ones, we always combine B/C because it's pretty much the same answer anyway. But we only get four options to give you. So grade the Harris-Walz campaign strategy so far. You think they have an A, they're doing great. A B/C, passing, could be better, could be way worse. B/C, that's the second choice. D or F. Hostile Woman on YouTube said F. They have no strategy other than blame Trump or to copy him. I am not Hostile Woman. Well, not capital H W. Hostile.
I would have woman. Thought Hostile Woman would have been very favorable. Nice.
Oh, I thought you meant like a lib.
It's kind of a green earth kind of person. Yeah.
Doug goes the other direction, says the answer is A. Polls have her essentially tied in spite of her being a garbage candidate. It should have been a walk for Trump, but so far her campaign gets an A. Brad, what do you think as far as Kamala Harris's campaign so far?
They're both wrong. It's a D. You can say, oh, well, the polls are essentially tied. Well, if the polls are essentially tied, James Carville said this, if you know, Trump constantly underperforms. He said, if you're tied, you're down three. So if the polls are tied, they're not doing a good job of running their campaign. They're doing better in spite of running a good campaign. I gave them a D because they do things like they have the right strategy. They understand what they need to do because they know they can't put her out in front of people. We can't put her out in front of people off script because whenever she goes off script, she makes word salad and nobody understands what she's saying, or she struggles to even answer the question, or she says something that is really left wing, which hurts her in the polls. The other thing is, too, I gave them a D because of their handling of the whole Arlington thing. Man, going after Gold Star's families is not a good strategy. So that's why I gave them a D. You can't ignore people. You can't not put out a good policy. And the only reason it's not an F is because they basically haven't given the American people the double bird saying, I don't want you to vote for me anyway.
Brad or Ryan, what do you think?
All right, hear me out, because the way I approach this question, grade the Harris-Walz campaign strategy so far, is to say that the campaign, we're going to take a lot and say that that's all baked in. So the fact that she is currently in the administration and saying that she's the change candidate, for instance, that's silly stuff, but it's baked in. Like, you can't really get away from it. They're trying to, and they can't figure out how. Trying to find new policy positions, mirroring some of Trump's kind of ancillary policy things. All of those things are just kind of baked in because they can't quite figure out how to position her because all ultimately she can't do it herself. It all comes down to this. She can't do this. So the campaign has a hard job of trying to figure out how to frame all of this in such a quick way. In that sense, I want to give them an A because they've chosen to just avoid all of it. Their strategy has been, we're going to just do scripted speeches and avoid everything. However, they need to transition from that now because it's catching up with them. So I'm going to give them a BC because their original strategy has worked thus far, but they haven't moved past it.
I'm with you, Ryan. I think it's a B/C. And the reason why I say that is because it's a statistical tie in basically every poll. And where they would have been up against Joe Biden, Donald Trump would have been doing so much better right now. So one of the reasons why I always said Joe Biden's not going to be the person is because in my mind, he was a sure loss. And the Democrats would rather engage in a possibility of being able to win the election, even if chaos ensues. And honestly, look, situation after situation after situation, the Democrats thrive in chaos. That's where they're able to do what they need to do to get across the finish line. They thrive on chaos. You could call it never letting a good crisis go to waste. I'd probably give it a C minus, just simply because I think that the direction that it's heading right now is where people are, every day that passes, more people are going to be interested in what's going on. And the more people are paying attention, the less that the Harris-Walz campaign has to offer those people. Because what they have to offer is that they aren't Trump. Everybody who's entering the chat already knew that. There's nothing else that Kamala Harris offers to the average American middle-class citizen. There's nothing that they offer that is like, oh, wow, that's a really great idea. You see me. You understand what I'm dealing with here. You know what I'm living financially here in the United States. You know what it's like being in a border state, and every state's a border state right now. You really understand what's going on, and it seems to me like you're in tune with what needs to be done next. I think it's a really, really tired campaign strategy to just not be Trump. But that also, at the same time, could still be enough. It just needs to be enough in the right places. I'm actually astonished that they haven't done more, tried to get more big names out to really support the cause. And by big names, I don't even really mean, like, I don't need to see Beyonce endorse Kamala Harris. Like, I don't need to see that. But just more of a groundswell of support and attention. That doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris, I mean, people are talking about her rallies and everything. Even her rallies have gimmicks.
Yes, they
it's
do.
Nowhere that Kamala Harris goes and gains some sort of visual support or visible support is it solely about Kamala Harris. I just feel like everywhere you look right now, there is interest in Donald Trump, intrigue in Donald Trump. And with Kamala Harris, her ceiling is she's not Trump. You think that can win her the election?
Yeah, I do. Only because there's been no vetting process for her. It's strange because, you know, she has won elections. Every election she's won have been layups. You know, they've been deep, deep blue areas where you don't really have to contend with a lot. You definitely don't have to contend with the media. The most contention with the media she's ever had is as vice president, and a little bit during the primary of 2020. And she really has failed those tests. And so she's back to a position now where she again just got it handed to her. I mean, it's really remarkable. But media moves faster than we're giving it credit for. And they've thought, hey, I got 2.5 months here, 3 months. We can kind of hide her this whole time, not realizing that this isn't the 80s. This isn't the 90s when, you know, you're just having 24-hour news launching. This is now every single day is a brand new news cycle. And you can't survive even 3 months of doing nothing. And even in just 3 months, she's going to be exposed. And I think that's what we were talking about earlier. It doesn't feel like the wind's blowing her way anymore because that steam engine has kind of run out. Now we're to the point where you do have to have some substance.
Well, we want to know what you think about this. And I've got comments coming in right now, and I'm going to grade some or read some of them here. Paul said her grade is an F. She copied her neighbor's paper and policies. It's funny because she like copied Biden's policies and he copied, I don't know how many people he plagiarized. She hasn't studied or shown up for the work and now expects to be prom queen. Hell no, Paul says. F. It's true. he's not really wrong. Betsy said, F. I understand what everyone is saying, but still F. No policies of her own. F also stands for fake and disgusting, as she is campaigning on so-called women's health, which equals abortion, in her opinion. I think that's what women's health is. That's code for women's health. Jackie says, I give the campaign a D and not an F due to their numbers, even while quarantining Kamala from any reliable interviews. And Scoot says, graded Harris Walz an A. Seem like an easy question. Polls are showing the momentum is with Democrats, voter registration particularly. Trump needs to make up a lot of ground. Fact check, please. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Wiggins America, he's going to have an extended weekend roundup for you, all the stories that you missed. So stick around for that. And go vote in the Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll and leave us a comment as to why you voted the way you did. We'll be right back.
Wiggins!
But it's a secret.
Yeah, we can't tell you. We wanted to tell you just enough where maybe you'd pick it up.
But the wildest ride in the wilderness that is also a secret makes it more exciting.
That's right. Because we want you to realize that this is not a Monday, but it is a lot of people's first day back this week. So it's kind of a hybrid of a Monday roundup, weekend roundup from everything that you missed over the long weekend. I wanted to start with this story because there's a little bit of a story behind it. It did happen this weekend. So we've talked about Katie Wiggins before.
It did happen this weekend, so.
Well, anything that happened over the weekend.
You don't need to prove to us that it qualifies. Just give us a story and then we'll tell you afterwards how
No. I gotta sort of hedge this one because I was sitting on the couch. Like we said, we didn't really do much this weekend. Sitting on the couch. My wife was sitting across from me. She starts laughing. She goes, I can't believe where we're at. I cannot believe where we're at. Now, we've talked about Katie Wiggins a little bit. When I first met Katie Wiggins, she was probably the kind of person who would not touch the word Republican with a 10-foot
pole. This is your wife.
This is my wife.
Not your sister.
That's right. I don't know whether she would be called a Republican at this point, but it's things like this that make me think, I think she's at least conservative. She's a writing teacher. So there's this whole community of...
Did you get permission to share all this?
Sort of.
No, that's a no.
Sort of. Well, she sent... I said, send me the article so that we can talk about this on the radio. I didn't tell her we're going to give her all the... We're going to give everybody the context.
No.
So that's bonus. That's bonus material.
She kind of knows what she's signed up for, though.
She knows. Okay. She knows. So she is a literary teacher. She teaches writing. She teaches classic literature, both international and... national, I guess, domestic literature. She is part of lots of groups also that, you know, one of them is called the NaNoWriMo, which stands for National Novel Writing Month. And apparently this is a pretty common thing if you're in the English world, in education, that November is a big challenge from NaNoWriMo to write 50,000 words as part of a novel or some sort of creative writing. NaNoWriMo has now said that we want to be clear, this is quote, we want to be clear in our belief that the categorical condemnation of artificial intelligence has classist and ableist undertones.
What does?
The use of AI in writing. Now, this is a topic that most English teachers agree. We don't want to be outsourcing all of our brain power and learning to write to AI. Otherwise, why learn it at all? But this organization has said that we need to embrace AI more because AI is tied to questions around privilege. Quote, not all brains have the same abilities and not all writers function at the same level of education or proficiency in the language in which they are writing. Now, as a writing teacher, my wife was astonished to see that a writing organization was saying that we need to embrace AI because some people aren't as good of writers as others.
I thought you said that AI was ableist.
No. They're saying that AI, that you don't want to be an ableist by not using AI. So they want to bring more AI in because...
What are they bringing it into? Like when you say writing, what does that mean?
Like the education process, teaching kids how to write. So they're saying we don't want kids who
That's
are
like
not...
like saying in math, if, you know, some people are bad at math, so everybody use calculators. Then nobody learns how to do math.
Yeah. It's saying, you know what? Not everybody's good at basketball, but we want everybody to play in the NBA. It's so ridiculous because this is creative writing.
That's why whether it be the WNBA, just kidding.
Whether it be fiction or nonfiction, some people happen to be better writers than others. That's what makes them want to go into writing. To say that, well, just let the bad ones use AI
isn't there
means you don't teach them.
In education, in teaching writing, though, and people who want to pursue writing and just people who need to understand how to write correctly?
Well, it depends on the field you go to. Exactly. Because if you're going to go into a different field...
Yeah, but like, what level are they talking about this in?
They're talking about in high school and middle school.
Well, in high school and middle school, you're not learning to write for a career. It's a standard skill.
You're just learning to write. And the point they're trying to make is... We want to make sure that people who aren't as good at writing can use AI more. It's so against what we should be doing. And they're using the language of the left to say, well, it's privilege that some people are better writers than others. And it's just these people have lost their minds getting into the arena of education now. And I think the reason I wanted to bring this up is because we talk about this kind of stuff being out there all the time. It was in my living room over the weekend that it is now affecting just my own wife's curriculum that people are telling her, don't teach writing if they're not very good at it. Just let them use AI. All right. I'm off my soapbox. Hey, but again, that happened over the weekend.
But I hate that so much. I hate it so much. To not teach people how to write. I mean, you may not be the world's greatest writer, but writing is how you can convey your ideas and your intent. And it is how you can change the world. And to say, don't even bother training them to do that. Just let them use AI. That's so
bad. But aren't they talking about adding AI into education, not replacing it?
Well, yes, but adding it in would mean that you'd open the door to kids, like this is already happening, where kids just go, I got a paper due tomorrow. I'm just going to say, write me a paper.
Well, sure. But like in math class, you can take a picture of the equation on your paper and have an app that will solve the whole thing for you. I mean, when we were growing up, our teachers were like, you can't use a calculator. You're never going to be carrying a calculator around with you. And now we have supercomputers in our pockets. I don't think that the implementation of technology into education is inherently bad. I just think I need to know more information as to what this is talking about, especially at writing is not well taught right now. It's not a focus. And you can tell by the way kids, especially because there's so much communication that takes place in a completely informal setting. So they are writing probably more than they ever have before. Children, because we talked to people to communicate. They almost explicitly write to one another in text messages and in social media stuff. But there's no concern for grammar and anything in that. And I don't know that there really needs to be. It's if it's an informal communication, that doesn't matter. But the understanding that they need to know how to write correctly, it's like the purpose of needing to know how to write isn't as important today as it was back then because we communicate so much more frequently now than we did back then. So I actually don't think that the need is the same, but I do think it is as important. So I do think you need to look at technology and say, how does technology become an asset, not a crutch?
Yeah.
And I think that if you think back to our time growing up and using calculators and getting your TI-83 and learning how to use that to do stuff was smart and good. I never have needed to do that stuff past high school because I wasn't interested in any way, shape, or form. I was good at math, but I wasn't interested in making a profession out of it. But like, there are every once in a while, life throws a very basic algebraic equation at you, and you're like, oh, okay, I can write this down and make the sides equal one another, and you feel pretty good about yourself. If you're going to be in a professional setting, you need to understand how to write a professional email. That's a lot different than, you know, we just talked the other day about, like, when was the last time you wrote a letter? And could you even write a formal letter? And we're in our 40s, and we learned it, and we're all like, eh. And then you say to yourself, like, I don't even think the person receiving it would be able to tell that it wasn't the correct format for a formal letter.
Right, yeah.
I think I would rather have... professionally, I would rather have an AI supervised communication,
okay,
than a grammatically riddled with errors poor attempt by a human
on the receiving end.
Yes,
I understand
in
that.
A professional setting.
I understand that. And that's what I'm saying is that if you're just teaching somebody who's going into a field that's not their primary, if you're a doctor or you're an engineer, but you're just not a great writer, I understand using these tools to help you. But if your field is writing, is for creative writers.
Well, sure. But I'm just saying that I don't think that that's determined in middle school writing and English.
Yeah.
Once you get into high school, like upper level high school or honors classes, then... I feel like you should be able to go through those and not have to weigh in on, or maybe study the comparison of the two. Like, this is writing without AI, and if you would have used AI, it would look like this, which is better. And, like, kind of do a thought experiment on the implementation of technology and how technology cannot replicate the human brain. It can kind of mimic it. In a way, but not replicate it.
Yeah, and I think that is very important, too, because like we were talking about with the math example, aren't you thankful to have learned math, even if you don't necessarily use that form of math all the time, to say, well, at least I learned the basics of how it works.
Yes, but I could Google the exact thing that I was trying to figure out without ever having to spend the time to be like, this is algebra. I know this.
Yeah.
I could just put it into a system and it would tell me the answer.
But your brain also kind of understands how that process happens now because you learned it.
Yeah,
even if you're not great at it.
But I don't need it.
You may not need it, but I still think it's better for our brains to get that activity, get that action, get that exercise, than to not have to do it at all. And I think that's where I'm coming from here. And that's where she's coming from, too. As a teacher of the subject, she's like, please don't tell me we're going down the slippery slope.
If anybody is going to be an advocate for no AI in it, it should be an honors level English teacher in high school.
She
should lead that crusade for sure.
Absolutely. So real quick, before we get to the top here, I just wanted to throw one more story out there, just as important too. Wendy's is bringing back their best frosty flavor, vanilla.
Oh, I've never had one, but it's got to be better than chocolate. I don't like frosties.
Agreed. Vanilla is coming back, but at the expense of the triple berry frosty.
Wow.
Which
is a shame.
But it's a secret.
Yeah, we can't tell you. We wanted to tell you just enough where maybe you'd pick it up.
The wildest ride in the wilderness that is also a secret makes it more exciting.
That's right. Because we want you to realize that this is not a Monday, but it is a lot of people's first day back this week. So it's kind of a hybrid of a Monday roundup, weekend roundup from everything that you missed over the long weekend. I wanted to start with this story because there's a little bit of a story behind it. And it did happen this weekend. So we've talked about Katie Wiggins before.
It did happen this weekend. So,
well, anything that happened over the weekend.
You don't need to prove to us that it qualifies. Just give us a story and then we'll tell you afterwards how
No. I gotta sort of hedge this one because I was sitting on the couch. Like we said, we didn't really do much this weekend. Sitting on the couch. My wife was sitting across from me. She starts laughing. She goes, I can't believe where we're at. I cannot believe where we're at. Now, we've talked about Katie Wiggins a little bit. When I first met Katie Wiggins, she was probably the kind of person who would not touch the word Republican with a 10-foot
pole. This is your wife.
This is my wife.
Not your sister.
That's right. I don't know whether she would be called a Republican at this point, but it's things like this that make me think, I think she's at least conservative. She's a writing teacher. So there's this whole community of...
Did you get permission to share all this?
Sort of.
No, that's a no.
Sort of. Well, she sent... I said, send me the article.
Yeah.
So that we can talk about this on the radio.
This or her?
I didn't tell her we're going to give her all the, we're going to give everybody the context.
Oh.
So that's bonus. That's bonus material.
She kind of knows what she's signed up for, though.
She knows.
Okay.
She knows. So she is a literary teacher. She teaches writing. She teaches classic literature, both international and national, I guess, domestic literature. She is part of lots of groups also that, you know, one of them is called the NaNoWriMo, which stands for National Novel Writing Month. And apparently this is a pretty common thing if you're in the English world, in education, that November is a big challenge from NaNoWriMo to write 50,000 words as part of a novel or some sort of creative writing. NaNoWriMo has now said that we want to be clear, this is quote, we want to be clear in our belief that the categorical condemnation of artificial intelligence has classist and ableist undertones.
What does?
The use of AI in writing. Now, this is a topic that most English teachers agree. We don't want to be outsourcing all of our brain power and learning to write to AI. Otherwise, why learn it at all? But this organization has said that we need to embrace AI more because AI is tied to questions around privilege. Quote, not all brains have the same abilities and not all writers function at the same level of education or proficiency in the language in which they are writing. Now, as a writing teacher, my wife was astonished to see that a writing organization was saying that we need to embrace AI because some people aren't as good of writers as others.
I thought you said that AI was ableist.
No. They're saying that AI, that you don't want to be an ableist by not using AI. So they want to bring more AI in because...
What are they bringing it into? Like when you say writing, what does that mean?
Like the education process, teaching kids how to write. So they're saying we don't want kids who
That's
are
like
not...
like saying in math, if, you know, some people are bad at math, so everybody use calculators. Then nobody learns how to do math.
Yeah. It's saying, you know what? Not everybody's good at basketball, but we want everybody to play in the NBA. It's so ridiculous because this is creative writing.
That's why whether it be the WNBA, just kidding.
Whether it be fiction or nonfiction, some people happen to be better writers than others. That's what makes them want to go into writing. To say that, well, just let the bad ones use AI
isn't there
means you don't teach them.
In education, in teaching writing, though, and people who want to pursue writing and just people who need to understand how to write correctly?
Well, it depends on the field you go to. Exactly. Because if you're going to go into a different field...
Yeah, but like, what level are they talking about this in?
They're talking about in high school and middle school.
Well, in high school and middle school, you're not learning to write for a career. It's a standard skill.
You're just learning to write. And the point they're trying to make is... We want to make sure that people who aren't as good at writing can use AI more. It's so against what we should be doing. And they're using the language of the left to say, well, it's privilege that some people are better writers than others. And it's just these people have lost their minds getting into the arena of education now. And I think the reason I wanted to bring this up is because we talk about this kind of stuff being out there all the time. It was in my living room over the weekend that it is now affecting just my own wife's curriculum that people are telling her, don't teach writing if they're not very good at it. Just let them use AI. All right. I'm off my soapbox. Hey, but again, that happened over the weekend.
But I hate that so much. I hate it so much. To not teach people how to write. I mean, you may not be the world's greatest writer, but writing is how you can convey your ideas and your intent. And it is how you can change the world. And to say, don't even bother training them to do that. Just let them use AI. That's so
bad. But aren't they talking about adding AI into education, not replacing it?
Well, yes, but adding it in would mean that you'd open the door to kids, like this is already happening, where kids just go, oh, I got a paper due tomorrow. I'm just going to say, write me a paper.
Well, sure, but like in math class, you can take a picture of the equation on your paper and have an app that will solve the whole thing for you. I mean, when we were growing up, our teachers were like, you can't use a calculator. You're never going to be carrying a calculator around with you. And now we have supercomputers in our pockets. I don't think that the implementation of technology into education is inherently bad. I just think I need to know more information as to what this is talking about, especially at a man. Writing is not well taught right now. It's like not, it's not a focus. And you can tell by the way kids, especially because there's so much communication that takes place in a completely informal setting. So they are writing probably more than they ever have before, children, because we talked to people to communicate. They almost explicitly write to one another in text messages and in social media stuff. But there's no concern for grammar and anything in that. And I don't know that there really needs to be. It's if it's an informal communication, that doesn't matter. But the understanding that they need to know how to write correctly, it's like the purpose of needing to know how to write isn't as important today as it was back then, because we communicate so much more frequently now than we did back then. So I actually don't think that the need, I don't think the need is the same, but I do think it is as important. So I do think you need to look at technology and say, how does technology become an asset, not a crutch?
Yeah.
And I think that if you, you know, think back to our time growing up and using calculators and getting your TI-83 and learning how to use that to do stuff was smart and good. I never have needed to do that stuff past high school because I wasn't interested in any way, shape, or form. I was good at math, but I wasn't interested in making a profession out of it. But like, there are every once in a while, life throws a very basic algebraic equation at you, and you're like, oh, okay, I can write this down and make the sides equal one another, and you feel pretty good about yourself. If you're going to be in a professional setting, you need to understand how to write a professional email. That's a lot different than, you know, we just talked the other day about, like, when was the last time you wrote a letter? And could you even write a formal letter? And we're in our 40s, and we learned it, and we're all like, eh. And then you say to yourself, like, I don't even think the person receiving it would be able to tell that it wasn't the correct format for a formal letter.
Right, yeah.
I think I would rather have, professionally, I would rather have an AI-supervised communication than a grammatically riddled with errors poor attempt by a human.
On the receiving end.
Yes.
I understand that.
In a professional setting.
I understand that. And that's what I'm saying is that if you're just teaching somebody who's going into a field that's not their primary, if you're a doctor or you're an engineer, but you're just not a great writer, I understand using these tools to help you. But if your field is writing, is for creative writers.
Well, sure. But I'm just saying that I don't think that that's determined in middle school writing and English.
Yeah.
Once you get into high school, like upper level high school or honors classes, then... I feel like you should be able to go through those and not have to weigh in on, or maybe study the comparison of the two. Like, this is writing without AI, and if you would have used AI, it would look like this, which is better. And, like, kind of do a thought experiment on the implementation of technology and how technology cannot replicate the human brain. It can kind of mimic it in a way, but not replicate it.
Yeah, and I think that is very important, too, because, like we were talking about with the math example, aren't you thankful to have learned math, even if you don't necessarily use that form of math all the time, to say, well, at least I learned the basics of how it works?
Yes, but I could Google the exact thing that I was trying to figure out without ever having to spend the time to be like, this is algebra. I know this.
Yeah.
I could just put it into a system and it would tell me the answer.
But your brain also kind of understands how that process happens now because you learned it.
Yeah,
even if you're not great at it.
But I don't need it.
You may not need it, but I still think it's better for our brains to get that activity, get that action, get that exercise, than to not have to do it at all. And I think that's where I'm coming from here. And that's where she's coming from, too. As a teacher of the subject, she's like, please don't tell me we're going down this slippery slope.
If anybody is going to be an advocate for no AI in it, it should be an honors level English teacher in high school. So she absolutely should lead that crusade for sure.
Absolutely. So real quick, before we get to the top here, I just wanted to throw one more story out there, just as important too. Wendy's is bringing back their best frosty flavor, vanilla.
Oh, I've never had one, but it's got to be better than chocolate. I don't like frosties.
Agreed. Vanilla is coming back, but at the expense of the triple berry frosty.
Wow. Which is a shame.
It is a shame. Because the triple berry.
Get rid of the triple berry. Vanilla and chocolate, that's all the only thing. Frosties.
It's sad. So I just wanted to let you know, if you're a fast food junkie, that you are going to be losing the triple berry frosty soon.
When?
Within probably the week. It sounds like they're phasing it out. So the last supply is what they're going to have for the rest of this week. I know where I'm going after work. After reading that article, I'm going to every Wendy's I can get because they're a dollar.
Just or get one from each. You could just get like five from one store.
Well, I don't want to be looked down upon.
Well, Jim Carafano and Congressman Bost next.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word. It's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
After you use Bounce Dryer Sheets and realize how fresh, soft, less wrinkled, and less staticky your laundry can be, you'll
put a sheet on it
every time. Like those socks that smell like they've been through a marathon.
Put a sheet on it.
Or that blanket that's got wrinkles on its wrinkles.
Put a sheet on it.
Maybe even your chatty coworker who keeps distracting you. Okay, Bounce Dryer Sheets can't do it all. But for fresher, softer, better laundry,
put a sheet on it with Bounce.